Let's take a break from the chaos in the country right now to turn to something lighter to end the hour. Why the heck not? We learned this week that HBO is going to produce a 10-episode revival of Sex and the City. NPR TV critic Eric Deggans is here to talk about this reboot that for some people is a dream come true. Eric, Sex and the City returns. What's that going to look like?
Yeah, one way in which the show's going to be different is that it won't feature Kim Cattrall, the actress who played Samantha, who in some ways, you know, brought a lot of sexiness to Sex and the City. The actress, Kim Cattrall, has been open about how she doesn't get along with star Sarah Jessica Parker, and she wasn't interested in doing any more iterations of the show. But, you know, we have a clip that sort of gives a sense of how she embodies some of the qualities of the show, where she talks a little bit about her attitude when it comes to being a professional in the city. Let's check it out.
Samantha Jones was a New York inspiration, a public relations executive. She routinely slept with good-looking guys in their 20s.
Mm. Remember that guy that I was going out with? Oh, God, what was his name?
Drew.
The sex guy. Right. Well, afterwards, I didn't feel a thing. It was like, hey, babe, gotta go. Catch you later. And I completely forgot about him after that.
That's a scene from the first episode. So, Eric, about Sex and the City, it broke a lot of taboos when it debuted in 1998 with female characters talking so openly about their sex lives. But so much has changed since then. Do you think that it's a wise move to bring back the show that's focused so squarely on these white, wealthy women who go around in expensive high heels?
I think if it's a show about that, yeah, then it's probably a mistake. But hopefully they will have decided that there's some other story that they want to tell. You know, the original show was so much about these women who were growing into their lives. They were getting married. They were thinking about raising a family. And it ended with the lead character, who was famously single, finally connecting with the love of her life. So if they are able to talk about the taboo things about middle-aged women that we still don't talk about now, I think it could be a really compelling show. But it all depends on whether how they ride that line between reminding you of what the old show was like, but also finding a way to take it forward and talk about new topics. And they also have to explain why Samantha's not in the picture in a way that doesn't disappoint fans or anger people who like that character. You know, they've set a very high bar for themselves. It'll be interesting to see if they can clear it.
Eric, I know there are also some new shows that you think have been overlooked that you want to talk about, including Netflix documentary The History of Swear Words. It's hosted by Nicolas Cage, and here's a clip from the show that the FCC will not get mad at us for playing.
The sweariest actor isn't Samuel L. Jackson, Al Pacino, or my personal favorite, Yosemite Sam, but Jonah Hill. And while Jonah Hill is known for his R-rated comedies, it was The Wolf of Wall Street that made him the king of the curse words, swearing a confounding 107 times in that movie alone.
And we won't hear them. What did you think of the documentary? Does all that swearing offer some kind of catharsis?
Well, let me first say that I was looking forward to the challenge of talking about this show on radio without getting a huge FCC fine for everybody who aired the program. Basically, this is a really smart and informative documentary about the history of profanities that is spiced with comments from comedians and performers. What you get is this really interesting look at where the boundaries of society are and how they change over time. What do we consider profane in one moment but not consider profane in another? How does it change depending on who uses the profanity? When a woman uses the B word, is that different than if a man uses it? So this is something people might have missed because it dropped on Netflix like 2 days before the Capitol attack. But it's worth taking a look at, especially if you want to get a little bit of an escape from some of the crazy news headlines of the day.
One more to talk about. You're a fan of Apple TV Plus's Dickinson, which is a historical drama based on the life of poet Emily Dickinson. Its second season came out last week. Did you like it?
It's a really interesting show. Basically, it's a show that tries to talk about what Emily Dickinson's life must have been like as she was starting to write poems and decide that that's what she wanted to do. But it's told with a very contemporary veneer. All the music is modern, and even the sensibilities of the characters are kind of modern. So it's almost like a CW kind of rendition of Emily Dickinson's genesis. And there's a funny scene in the first episode of the second season where her eyesight is starting to fade. fail, and her dad has taken her to a really expensive doctor and is a little disappointed with the diagnosis that he winds up with. Let's check it out.
This was a lot of money to pay for a bit of impossible advice. Avoid the sun. She's not a bat, you know.
Dad, it's okay. I don't need the sun. I still have the moon.
Emily, hush. Can't you see I'm in the middle of shouting at this man?
If you like, you could stay a couple more days. I could conduct further observation.
I want to go home.
Let me just present you with the bill.
Oh, you're a crook.
I'm actually America's very first ophthalmologist.
So, you know, the characters kind of refer in a knowing way, you know, to the historical nature of it, that sometimes they break the fourth wall. Again, it's something that could be a little escapist that people could watch to maybe take their mind off of what's happening in government right now.
I don't know what you're talking about. NPR TV critic Eric Deggans, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.